Argument is Derezinski v. Mukasey. Mr. Berg.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Roy F. Berg, and I represent the petitioner in this next case before you, Mr. Andres Derezinski. Your Honors, I believe we have agreement on several important issues, and I'd like to go over those very quickly, if I may. First, I believe we have agreement that this Court has jurisdiction and that the consolidated petitions for review in this case were filed in a timely manner and that venue is proper in this court. Next, I believe we have agreement that the notice for the hearing, the August 1994 hearing, was sent by certified mail and returned unopened and stamped unclaimed. And here I must apologize to the court and to counsel that I had in error in my reply brief said it had been returned more than 3 months before. If you look at page 5, footnote 2 of my reply brief, actually had it been returned according to the stamp on the envelope June 7th, 1994, and that is not 3 months before the hearing, which was in August, and I apologize once again. The next area of agreement I believe we have is that the time and number restrictions, normal restrictions on motions to reopen and motions to reconsider, do not apply in this case. I believe we have an agreement that motions to reopen and rescind an in absentia deportation order can be made at any time if there's a claim that there was no notice of the hearing.
Mr. Berg, I mean, actually, this is the case I was thinking of with the 11 years, but the underlying issue that we have faced in a number of cases about this difference between sending of notice and actual receipt of notice is one we've looked at. And we have said, yes, it does have to be receipt, but there has to be some evidence that something wasn't received. And in this instance, there are findings of fact that the service did use certified mail, that there's nothing else that seems to indicate it was not the wrong address, it wasn't anything was wrong. So there has to be a credibility finding, and the finding is that in this instance there was receipt, as I understand the administrative record. Now, I understand that you're challenging that too, but this is a factual issue in cases like this one. And if there was actual receipt of this notice of the hearing date, then there's no case here, right?
Well, Your Honor, I think in this case, if we look at page 218 of the record, the envelope is returned.
And I know it's returned, but why is it returned? You know, is it returned because he takes one look at it and says, gee, I don't want to have anything to do with this? Or is it returned because, you know, it's shuffled off and the postal carrier can't give it to anybody or whatever? I mean, there are two possibilities, and it's a factual story here. Mm-hmm. And a finding is made that in this instance, it was returned because he wouldn't take it, not because it didn't get to the right place.
I think it's marked unclaimed.
Right.
And it's similar in
that
respect
to... That's why I'm saying he wouldn't take it.
Well, I don't think it's clear from this record that he ever knew that there was a certified letter.
That's the factual question.
Right.
But there's no way, ultimately, other than by credibility determinations, that factual question for something that happened ages ago is going to be resolved. Right? It's a May 1994 mailing. I don't remember what I was doing around my mailbox in May 1994.
Well, Your Honor, the letter was sent certified mail, and it was returned unclaimed.
It was sent to the correct address, though.
It was sent to the correct address.
The address that was in the record. And there was no notice given that he had changed addresses.
He had not changed address, and the...
And he actually later on gets the actual notice of the decision, doesn't he?
Which is sent by regular mail.
Right.
So I think we have agreement that notice was mailed and it was returned unclaimed. You've made an excellent point, Judge Wood. What happened? Why was it unclaimed? It's our position that he did not receive any notice of it whatsoever and was not aware of it.
What's your evidence for your position?
Well, there's nothing on the envelope to show that he actually received any notice of it whatsoever.
But don't we have conflicting testimony? We have one story that maybe they weren't around at that time. Then later on, the wife files an affidavit saying that the mail was all a mess and that how. I mean, we've got a couple of different stories going on.
We don't have conflicting testimony. I believe you're referring to, and respondents pointed out in this brief, is the initial motion that was filed in 1994. That motion was not supported by affidavit at all. And then there was a notice of appeal filed by that prior counsel that said something a little different, and then her brief, which said something a little different. Now, the motion to reopen was denied by Judge Fujimoto specifically because there was no attached affidavit. And he said that statements of counsel, whether in a brief or in a motion, are not evidence. And so we don't have evidence.
But in terms of burdens of production and persuasion, the government comes in and says, we mailed this certified mail to the correct address, and so the normal course of events is that things are presented to the right address. And then no evidence is produced at that point to defeat the government's showing. I mean, it seems to me the burden after the government shows what it did had shifted to Mr. Derezinski to show that there was a problem.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the big difference here, and I think we first have to look at the difference between deportation proceedings and removal proceedings. Removal proceedings are those proceedings that were begun after April 1st of 1997, after the Act was amended in 96, that provided for notice of the time and date to be sent by regular mail. That's the Joshi case and others. Now, Peralta, the decision from just a few months ago, Peralta Cabrera, who Judge Evans was on the panel, that was just like this case. In 1994...
That was a care of mail.
Exactly.
Case, so that's different.
Well, the similarity, I think, is that it was a 94 proceeding. The notice was sent by certified mail, and the notice came back and was in the court file. Now, that one was stamped attempted not known. This one was stamped unclaimed. Not attempted, just unclaimed. Now, it's our position that he was not aware of that certified mail whatsoever. There's no evidence in the record that he was aware. Our position is that he was not. Now, what I believe that this court said in Peralta is that the INA at the time, the Immigration Nationality Act at the time, mandated the duty was on the government to show that notice was given.
Well, and all I'm saying is the government comes forward with evidence that notice was given when it shows how it was done and so forth. And had Mr. Derezinski not waited 11 years to assert his claim, if he'd come right in as soon as he gets the notice that he's going to be deported, and said, hey, you know, what's this all about? I never received anything. Please reopen my proceedings. Then he could have filed an affidavit. He could have said we weren't home that day. You know, we never got it, whatever. That's why it was unclaimed. He could have said anything appropriate that he might have said. Instead, he waits 11 years and comes in. The government still, though, had produced the evidence that from which one could infer that this was offered to him, and he just didn't take it.
Your Honor, once again, there was a motion to reopen filed in 1994, within a short time after the order was entered. The order was entered August 24th, 1994. The initial motion to reopen was filed in September. Now, it was the government that did nothing for the 11 years that intervened until he was stopped by the Chicago Police Department on a minor traffic stop.
What duty did the government have to do anything other than what it had done, which was to say he has to be deported? Why? So you think the government has a duty to sort of track people around and make sure they leave?
Well, it was the government's order, a deportation order, which they have a duty to enforce. He was contending.
He doesn't have a duty to comply with it?
Well, it was his position that it was, and it's our position, that it was an improper or illegal deportation order that.
Well understood line of cases actually derives from the civil rights era that even if you think an order has been entered in error, you have a duty to comply with it until such time as a court or, in this instance, perhaps an agency sets it aside. You don't just flout orders that you think are wrong.
Well, there was no order for him to report for deportation. There was no effort made whatsoever to come and get him. And as this court pointed out in Peralta, they simply could have gone to his address and given him the notice. That's provided for in the statute. Or, as was pointed out in Peralta, perhaps a better course of action was to put on the order to show cause in the place provided for it, the place and time of the hearing.
That. they never did that, though.
Well, that is done often, Your Honor, but it just wasn't done in this particular case. And so it is our position that since a motion to reopen can be filed at any time, he filed it when they decided to enforce it. There was action taken very shortly after the arrest. Unfortunately, that motion was not supported by affidavit. But in any event, the notice of the hearing was returned unclaimed, unopened. The only notice of the hearing was returned unopened and unclaimed to the file when Judge Fujimoto entered his order. And it's our position that he should not have entered that order with such clear evidence that the respondent was not aware of his hearing. No petition to rent. I thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berg. Mr. Mattson?
Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel. This case is clearly about constructive receipt, and as mentioned, in 1994...
Can you tell me about post office regulations? I thought if you send a letter by registered mail or certified mail that there are multiple attempts made to deliver that.
There appears on the envelope three, maybe four dates. I think one duplicates another, but if I remember correctly, it says early in May, and then May 25th, and then in June.
So the correct interpretation here would be that there were multiple attempts to deliver this letter to the address that was provided by the petitioner.
That's correct, Your Honor, based solely on the envelope. And the evidence that the substantial and probative evidence that the board's decision in Grijalva required would be evidence that the Postal Service has of attempted delivery of certified mail. There may well have been, and perfectly plausible and decent evidence that would warrant reopening and rescinding an in absentia order in 1994 would have been Postal Service records. In 1994, he presented nothing other than a statement of his counsel that he was still in his truck on his way from California, which was on the original notice of appeal, and then in the brief said, well, they weren't at home for the 3 or 4 week period during which the Postal Service attempted delivery, which leads to one of two conclusions. Either that address was not valid, or he made himself unreachable by providing an address to which he knew, if the argument in the most recent motion to reopen is to be credited, he knew at the time that he was having problems with his mail.
Well, the third possibility is he just wasn't home. People do go away for 3 weeks without abandoning their homesteads.
People who are subject to deportation proceedings in 1994 are on notice that they're going to get a hearing, and he was told, we're going to send this, and it's important. And he took no steps and took no action and did nothing on his case until he received, apparently, the judge's in absentia order, and then promptly went to seek counsel.
So if he was on vacation, you think he should have filed a forwarding order or something?
At least call or say something. I've received this order to show cause, and even assuming that he understands no English, he took no steps at all to have it interpreted for him, which led... although the board's discretionary decision on the motion to reopen, which... I'll get to in a moment, but there are issues that show that Mr. Derazinski just took no action to respond, either promptly or accurately. Once he retained counsel, they pursued a motion to reopen and rescind correctly, but failed to provide the evidence that would support reopening and rescinding. Judge made a determination. It was appealed to the board. The board made a decision saying you haven't presented sufficient evidence. The judge's decision not to reopen was correct, and then Mr. Derazinski did not take advantage of any of the appeals process that were then available to him. He did not appeal to this court. He did not seek any other review of or challenge the order to show cause or address any of the constitutional claims that have been presented. And he flouted the authority of the tribunal and ignored the decision for a period of 11 years. Constructive receipt is clearly appropriate and warranted in this case. There's nothing else that could have been done, and to require the service to, in response to some allegation that the certified mail, or now under the procedures, regular mail, was not received, then to require the scarce resources available to go and personally serve, and then perhaps even to read in foreign languages the contents to guarantee that it would eviscerate the in absentia statute. Would make it meaningless. Finally and briefly, because I believe the issues have been sufficiently addressed, the case presents, even assuming that the case is reopened and rescinded, the issues are now quite stale. There's nothing in this case to be decided. There's no element of relief to be presented in this case. There's nothing that we can go back to the board and say you must here now do. He's not eligible for any of the forms of relief that are available under the statute. Certainly suspension is gone, and he didn't have the time available to him. And there's very little that the board could do for him because of his lack of diligence. And that was, as I understand it, what prompted the board to enter its finding about discretionary. There's no reason for them to open this in their discretion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Madsen. Mr. Berg, your time expired, but we'll give you a minute if you have anything you'd like to say.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Very quickly, counsel says that perhaps he should have called if he went on vacation. There is no address for the court at all listed on the order to show cause. There's no phone number listed at all.
But the problem with your position, you've just given a formula for aliens to evade process by the government, right? Because what should the government do?
I think this court in Peralta Cabrera laid it out very clearly.
What do you do? Pardon?
Well, I think this court just several months ago in Peralta Cabrera laid it out, what the various options were, and citing to Jones v. Flowers, a Supreme Court decision from 2006.
I don't see Jones versus Flowers as relevant remotely, apart from the fact that the address to which they sent it was where he had lived 33 years earlier. I mean, that was pretty absurd. But beyond that, of course, people want to receive notice that their house is about to be sold to pay taxes. But if you're an alien, you may want to hide out because obviously many illegal aliens are very able to function in the United States. He had his 11 years and so on. So, given the incentive of the alien to avoid acknowledging receipt of notices of this sort, what is it you regard as the minimum that the government should do?
Well, I think the statute provided at the time, in 1994...
Just answer me. What do you think, at a minimum, the government should do? Don't mention statute. Just tell me.
If the notice came back, like in this case, they could have, at a minimum, sent it out by first-class mail.
No. The problem is not the arrival, right? Not the arrival of the mail at the... It's sent back. It arrived. Fine. That's not the problem. It was sent back as unclaimed, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why would sending it first class make any difference?
Well, I think the same reason, I know you don't agree that Jones versus Flowers applies, but they talked about it there. If it had been sent back first class, it doesn't require a signature, and it doesn't require anyone to be at home. And so a letter, and he did receive the letter, clearly of the order. That was sent by first class mail, not by certified mail return.
So this is a paradox. We usually think, well, certified mail is if you really want to get confidence that you delivered. Now you're saying they should send it by regular mail?
In certified mail, then there's proof that it was received, and that was the statutory scheme at that time. It was to be sent by certified mail.
Statutory scheme. Your argument is that you have to send it by certified mail and by regular mail?
No, first it has to be done by personal service, and if that's not practical, then by certified mail.
And then by regular mail?
Well, I'm saying that if it comes back, there's no proof that that person received the notice.
So, now, okay, so what's the minimum? They do regular mail. Okay. Is that it? Is that good enough?
If it's done by regular mail, then there's additional proof that...
Does regular mail, sending it when you get it back, says unclaimed, if you then send it by regular mail, does that satisfy your constitutional duties?
Once again, the issue, as I understand it from what this court is saying,
Answer my question straight. If they send back, they get the unclaimed, they get the thing back. Now they send it regular mail. Is that it, or do they have to do more?
It depends on whether it's received or not, Your Honor, because, as we
said,
as we said in
Joshi, for goodness sake, they don't know whether it's received.
Well, that then gives them an opportunity to come forward and say, okay, now I have it, and come forth. But
wait
not
a
100% of mail is delivered, Your Honor.
You're garbling it. Come on. The question is not what it gives him a chance to do. The question is, what is this service, what is, you know, DHS, what is it required to do? Is it enough to send it by regular mail after certified mail? Sends it by regular mail, and he never shows up. Now what?
Well, the statute provides that...
Tell me what the statute provides. Tell me what you think is the minimum, whether it's statute, due process, anything, the service is required to do. This guy shows up, says, I never got it by regular mail. I never got it. Now what?
Then it's an evidentiary question.
Well, how do you answer an evidentiary question of that sort?
Well, in this case, we have two affidavits that he never received it. But it's a different job. She is different
this
from this.
Case, look, suppose now government sends it regular mail. He claims it never arrived. And he has signs an affidavit saying he never got it. Now what does the government have to do?
Then it's a question of fact.
Well,
did he get it or did he not?
How possibly answer that question of fact?
That's for the trier of fact to make a determination.
What do you mean, trier of fact? What's he supposed to do?
The trier of fact or the respondent or the petitioner?
Trier of fact, the immigration judge.
The immigration judge makes a determination.
How does it make a determination? Guy comes up and says, I never got it. Now, what does the immigration judge say?
Well, if it's sent by regular mail and the immigration judge and he says he never got it, then I think that can be enough that he didn't get it if he has it, his affidavit and his evidence that he didn't get it. Proving a negative, Your Honor, is never easy to do.
I don't understand. Who's proving the negative?
The individual is called on to prove that something didn't happen.
Right.
That he didn't get the notice.
So
he
has
trying
his
to prove
affidavit.
An event
now
did
he
not
testifies. Happen. Now what? Does he have the burden of proof?
Does he have the burden of proof of proving that he never got it?
Right.
In the theoretical thing that you put forth, perhaps he would have.
What's
the burden
theoretical
of proof.
About it?
Well, because in this case we have the notices and
this case.
In our case here, the notice
I'm
came back.
I'm talking about what the service has to do to satisfy you.
Okay, let me help you.
Yes, thank you.
And this is what happened in Peralta Cabrera.
Yes.
They personally give an order to show cause to somebody.
Yes.
That he received.
Yes.
Why not put in that a date? You have to be back here at a certain time, and now he's got it. Rather than say, you're going to be deported, and we'll let you know what happens next, and then go through all this mailing rigmarole.
Thank you. And, Your Honor, right at page 224 of the record is the order to show cause page that lists where it's supposed to be, at what time.
That's a much easier system for both the service and somebody in your client's position.
And as you pointed out in the Peralta case, that's often done. It's done on a traffic ticket. Why can't it be done on something this important? And it is often done in other cases.
I mean, the worst thing is that they have to come back in court on that particular day and they're told, we're not quite ready yet.
They get a continuance.
Back on this date. Now we get rid of all this.
And they're personally handed the notice or advised when that next date is. That never happened here. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. So, Mr. Mattson, I have a question for you. Come up back. So what about Judge Evans's suggestion?
To require the Border Patrol agents in Yuma, Arizona to...
Require necessary. Why isn't that the sensible practice?
Because I don't think they have enough information to know when a case can be docketed.
Why is that?
They have no idea what the workload is in Chicago when they're in Yuma, Arizona, serving
the order. When was the order to show cause given to them?
April 21st.
And when was the notice sent out?
May 16th. It was dated May 16th.
So what did they learn in 3 weeks? I don't understand.
As I understand it, the Yuma office would forward the order to show cause signed to the Chicago office of INS, and INS would then notify the immigration court. There's an order to show cause.
The order to show cause came from some different entity than the immigration court?
That's correct, Your Honor.
It didn't come from the immigration court?
And under the current scheme, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. In the past, it was really two entities, essentially INS and the Executive Office for Immigration Review. Now, Customs and Border Protection may have been involved, Immigration and Customs Enforcement would have been involved, and DHS and the immigration judges.
I guess what's peculiar about that, we think of in order to show cause as something issued by a court. But you're saying it's not issued by the immigration court. It's something else in the hideous bureaucracy of DHS. Is that it?
Well, the order to show cause is no longer used. It's now the notice to appear.
Notice to appear. Notice to appear is not issued by the court?
Now they're issued by the Department of Homeland Security.
Either ICE or CBP.
It's issued by DHS, right. And the immigration court is the Justice Department.
Yes.
So that's the problem. So it's not feasible for them to put the date in the notice. Is that right? Apparently not.
Not as I understand it. No, Your Honor.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Mattson and Mr. Berg, for the illuminating argument.